talking personal finance. And this week, we are looking at the things you need to know to make sure that your policy, particularly a pension policy, is paid out fully when it is time. This week, one of the big stories of families, very public, very messy battle with a big financial giant, Old Mutual, and even then other members of the public, hundreds of other people coming forward with their own experiences of not being able to get their pensions paid out or their policies paid out when they needed it. And so that's what we're talking about this morning. And maybe you have an experience of taking out a policy, and when it was time to then get the money when you needed it, the money wasn't there. What happened? What was the reason you were given for not being able to claim on your policy? Give us a call on 011-883-0702. Send us your SMSs on 31702. Joined, as always, by a certified financial planner, Paul Rulosa. Paul, as always, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Guru. Yes, and this is a very interesting story. But I think needs to be balanced out a bit. You know, it's kind of David and Goliath pathway. And I think the social media platforms really like that kind of way of extending themselves. And I do think, and I must just say this outright, the service providers in our country, in our industry, are ready to pay out. But they don't just do it automatically. There are checks and balances that have to take place before a claim or a pension or, you know, a cashing in of a policy takes place. And I guess that in this particular story, it's somewhere in between that something got in the way and that pension wasn't paid out as quickly as the person expected.
And so in this instance, one of the things certainly that we heard from the insurer, from the Old Mutual, was there'd been a matter relating to a divorce decree. So they'd been in the instance of, there'd been a pension taken out, but then there'd been a divorce. But they weren't aware that there'd been a divorce, and that then impacted the payout. How does that work? How would a divorce decree or a separation, a dissolution of a marriage, impact a pension payout?
Well, it has direct impact on it, because in the Act, the spouse is entitled to 50% of the pension. You know, even during desperate times, we were finding that people were getting divorced so that they could access their pension funds. And I think this particular case now leans towards why that particular regulation is in place. Before you can claim, obviously, you've got to prove the divorce, the circumstances around that. But the divorcee can definitely claim against a pension fund. They're entitled to 50% of it. And what actually happens is you approach the service provider with that divorce decree, and the pension is paid out to you, that portion of the pension is paid out. Now, in this particular case, not knowing that, obviously there is a surprise at the end of the year, end of the maturity of the pension, to find that it has been accessed already through a divorce. And that obviously would be a very big disillusionment for the claimant. And, you know, we'd have to know why and where. But the point really is this, to your question, you can access it. It's the only time. You see, pensions generally are only accessible from 55 onwards. You can only go onto pension in South Africa from that age. Prior to that, you can actually access the money through a divorce or a death, or a disability for that matter. And as I say, just reiterate that in the past, there have been cases where desperate people, financially desperate, had tried to access their pension funds by getting divorced so that at least the spouse could get half of it out prematurely.
Of course, this case between, I think, the Molefe family and the and Old Mutual then sparked a lot of other people then sharing their experiences of not being able to get payouts. And it seemed a lot of it had to do with the accuracy of details. So, yes. You know, people saying, I took out, or my grandfather or my dad took out a pension 20, 30 years ago, or policy 20, 30 years ago, when it was time for them to get a payout on it or claim on that policy, it turns out the name had been changed, or the name was incorrect, or the name had been captured, inaccurately. Mm-hmm. Can that affect your payout? If, for instance, I take out a policy, but then I spell my name with an E instead of an A, that would then impact, I'm not going to get that money.
Well, I think that what actually happens on claim, there's definitely an audit from the service provider to make sure that that claim is accurate and is going to the right person. I think that's the real hoop to jump through. So they're going to do checks and balances. They're going to find out, you know, are you the recipient, the real one? Look, they are often there is names that aren't correctly spelt. And, you know, it will delay the payout. But at the checks and balances side, you just need to prove that you are the actual owner or the beneficiary. And that goes through in process of IDs and proof of residence. You know, there are also hoops to come through, I might just mention as well, with the Financial Intelligence Centres Act. There are a lot of, you know, regulations that we are guided by. And you can't just simply pay out to someone. We've got to prove the source of the funds. We have to prove that it is actually you. You do live in that particular and reside in that particular address that you submitted. Just leaning towards that, there's a lot of regulation and red tape to get through. And yes, if you haven't spelt your name correctly or you gave the wrong ID, it obviously is going to delay the payout. But they do that at the time of claim. It's not only even in pensions, but even in life insurance, when it comes to paying out a death claim, there's a lot of red tape, as I say, that has to go through. Because the bottom line is that the service provider is obliged to pay the amount that is due to the right person, and that has to be verified at source.
So in the instance, it seems for a lot of people, the first time they become aware that something is awry or something isn't quite right with their policy is when trying to claim. Mm. When you take out the policy, or even during, you know, the time where, like, for instance, a pension, you don't really need to claim on that until, for instance, your retirement age or at death. Are you able to get access to that information just to see if it is correct? Because it seemed a big theme was, you know, you take out this policy, you're contributing to it regularly, you assume it works, or you assume it's, you know, it's doing what it's meant to do. And then at the time when you need it, that's when you realize something has gone wrong. Are you, as the policyholder, able to check during the time when you aren't claiming if the details are still correct, if, you know, if it is still all in order, so that when you do need to claim, it's fine?
Well, yes, certainly. And I think that's the great advice for today, Gugu, is get back to your service provider and ask them for the latest statement, reflecting all the details they have on record, and audit them yourself. Go through them carefully to make sure that they are there, especially for life insurance. You know, life insurance is dealt with when the owner passes on, and the beneficiaries generally don't really, you know, go into the detail of how that policy was set up. And I would say, as a policy owner, definitely get back to the service provider, ask them for a statement and a reflection of all the personal details that they've got on record, and go through them. And you are entitled to do that. You see, the policies too, many years ago, Gugu, we used to get a policy. It used to arrive in a document and you'd file it away. And that doesn't happen any longer. It's all digitized. It's all sitting there in a record on a file with your service provider. And yes, at the touch of a button or a phone call, they can definitely send down a detail and just go through it very carefully to make sure. I might just add in here before time runs away. You know, that if you are a beneficiary on a retirement fund, and I'm talking about pension, provident fund, and retirement annuities, you may record a beneficiary. You may reflect that on record that you would like someone to benefit from those funds. But I might just also caution that that's not necessarily going to be paid out immediately. Because on retirement funds, that you have trustees that are obliged to look for dependency on retirement funds. And, you know, you may want someone to benefit, but they've got to go through a whole process, and that could take quite long, just to understand that there isn't anyone else like a strange child or a, you know, someone that was dependent on you as a spouse or a partner. They've got to go through that process to establish that before they pay out to your nominated beneficiary, they're not leaving out anyone else that might be dependent. And those dependencies if proven to the trustees, will be paid out accordingly as well. They will then go to a committee and decide what percentages the various beneficiaries and dependents should get. And that could take up to about a year to do so. So just be cautioned about that too. It's not an automatic thing when it comes to beneficiaries on retirement funds. There is a process behind the scenes that does take place as well.
A question here from Sipo on WhatsApp saying, good morning, Googs and Paul. Please advise on the tax implications of cashing in on pension savings at 55, with example, Old Mutual. I think it would be with any financial services provider.
Well, there's a retirement fund tax scale. When you get to 55, you are allowed to take a third of your cash if it's a pension or a retirement annuity fund. A third of it will come out in cash. And the other two-thirds, you don't have to take it, but you can. If you want to take one-third of it out in cash, it's subject to a scale of tax. The first 500,000 rand of that cash is free. And the rest of it, then anything above that, is now enters into a scale of from 18% all the way up to 30-odd percent. And so be careful about that, because you know you then would have to make a very discerned decision as to how much tax I want to pay to the receiver, leaving behind as much as you possibly can, because the other two-thirds has to buy a pension. And there are various forms of pension. You've got life annuities, you've got living annuities, and that's really the tricky part of it. Where you're setting those up correctly needs to be very carefully considered. But to the question, there is a tax implication on the cash that you draw out. And the first 500,000 rand is free. It's only used once, okay, and you can't apply it to every single policy you've got. It's a collective amount and can only be used at retirement for that purpose. And then you've got to just pay a higher rate of tax, anything above that.
We received another message from Anonymous on 31702. It says, good morning. My ID could not be linked. My profile is under someone else's name with whom we share a date of birth and surname. Please advise.
That's a tricky one. Yes, yeah, that's a contestation between our caller and or listener and their service provider. You've got to get down to the bottom of that and iron it out before it's too late. The point is, it's an administrative problem which has to be sorted, and there are ways to do that between the two. But that's a matter of urgency. If you can't find your ID and you're busy paying a policy, you know, that's got to be ironed out very carefully. And it's a question of getting back to the administrator of that service provider on the phone to them. The call centers generally can put you through to the relevant departments, but that needs to be rectified. That obviously is just a mistake somewhere in the line, which does happen. I'm afraid, yeah, we're all kind of, it's not, you know, it's not exact, and it's not without any sort of reason to, you know, the accuracy of things generally is good, but not all the time is perfect. So yes, get back to the service provider very quickly.
At which point would you bring in the short-term insurance ombudsman? Because there is an ombudsman that regulates the sector, the insurance sector. And if you don't get any joy with the internal processes of your insurer, you can approach them. At which point can you do that?
Well, as a measure of last resort, you know, your first line is generally to the service provider. If you've got a financial planner or an advisor, I'd also throw that complaint into his corner as well. And generally speaking, they have a better line in because they understand the processes better than you might. So I would say if you have a financial planner or advisor, throw the problem there. If you don't, straight to the provider itself. And you record everything. Emails are generally a good way to do it because, you know, voice recordings sometimes are difficult to bring up in terms of evidence. But the point is to contact them as a measure of last resort. If you're not getting any joy out of it, then you are entitled to get to the ombudsman, who will deal and pick up with that complaint very quickly. If you've got evidence through emails and supporting documentation in terms of your endeavors to contact that service provider, you can, you know, give them to him as well. And he'll take up the case very quickly. And generally they respond very quickly that on that side of the coin too, because, you know, it becomes a PR problem if it gets out there that, you know, they're not delivering the promise that they make in terms of their product.
Mm. Paul, as always, it's great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thanks, Gugu. Great chatting to you.
That is our certified financial planner, Paul Roelofser, joining us this morning. If there is a question you'd like for us to look at in one of our personal finance conversations, send it through to us on WhatsApp on 0727021702. If the question or the topic needs a little bit more space, send it through on email to Gugs, that's G-U-G-S, at 702.co.za.